with the by-election coming up for the community to vote on people to take Bob's position on the community board, we thought we'd talk to Jenny just about Bob's legacy and what he stood for and that sort of thing. Seemed like an ideal time to do it. So thanks for joining us, Jenny. And one of the questions, I don't think I've ever asked Bob asked this myself to him, but how many hours a week was he doing for his work on the community board, bearing in mind how little they get paid?
Well, put it this way, it doesn't work out at minimum rate.
Right.
Some weeks he did more hours when he was chair, but he would be doing on average probably a day a week.
Okay.
With phone calls and stuff. Sometimes more, like when he was going over the hill to meetings, the way they fell, some weeks he was over there a couple of times a week, other times that he might not have a meeting, but between workshops, reading materials, pre-meetings, sometimes too he would end up at a meeting with a different hat on.
Yes.
And end up being asked community board stuff as well. So, yeah, he wore many hats, so he often ended up with confusing himself sometimes.
Yeah, our interviews were a bit like that. He would come in and we'd talk about from different perspectives because he was involved with the Lions, he was president of the Lions and all that as well. What do you think the thing was that with all his work in the community, because it was so much more than the community board, but including the community board, what do you think Bob was most proud of the work he'd done?
He was really proud of a lot of things, and part of that was just making a difference. He's very passionate about Raglan. He loves Raglan. And that certainly came through in the messages I've been getting.
Yeah.
One of the things he was really proud of was rebuilding the relationship between council and the community board. It was a very... there was a lot of distrust.
Yeah, yes.
And there wasn't a lot of listening.
So we know that the background to that for people who aren't aware, when Bob became... or the term before Bob was the chair of the community board, the relationship with the community board and the council had not gone very well under the there were two different chairs at that time, and Bob and the new board came in and it was their job, I guess, well, it had to be their job to try and sort that out. How do you go about a job like that?
Bob was very much, you had to work within the system, you had to respect the different roles and responsibilities. The community board has a governance role. It can't dip its fingers into operations. And he was really clear with that. And he worked with both the council and the staff. And, you know, he treated people with respect and he built relationships with them. And that's, I think, what is one of his true legacies, was building those relationships. You know, he went over the hill. He didn't expect Ngarrawarrhia to come to him. He went to Ngarrawarrhia. And he changed the whole relationship between Waikato District Council and its community boards. And he ended up being seen as a mentor. He helped other community boards within the Waikato area. He would get calls. He went to a couple of conferences. We've had people that have dropped in at home when they've been on holiday to come and see him. They've talked to him about issues they might have been having between their board and their council or within their board. And I think one of the things he was really clear about is, as a board, we need to speak with one voice. We can have differences of opinion, but I think they've done a lot of work on having those discussions and understanding points of view and coming to a consensus.
And you have
a lot more. And the other thing is as well. He understood about working within the system, and that one of the things he wanted was that the community board would put in submissions on whether it was a strategy or a new bylaw, and that certainly the current board has been very good at doing that, and that helps when they make the decision. They see what Raglan thinks, and it's not necessarily individual voices, but this is on behalf of the community.
I guess we've actually, I'm just thinking about, like, there's the airfield issue at the moment, and I could see that when I watched the last community board meeting, that all the board members had been talking to various people in the community. It was, like, really clear that they'd taken on that role. But how hard is it to represent a whole community, especially we know this one is a very diverse community with quite polar opposite points of view at times? Like how do you actually do that with any integrity, especially when you've got your own personal views?
You need to be an advocate for the community, and Bob didn't always agree with the stance of the community board, but he would agree to what the voice was going forward. It is hard, and there will always be challenges, but I think part of understanding the diversity of the community is having that diversity on the community board. You know, one of the things is that local government's talked about as being pale, male and stale.
Yeah.
Bob fitted that demographic but didn't, because he wasn't stale and he was quite visionary and would take the long-term view. And you have to be able to do that. You have to put aside your personal views. You know, obviously you can say what you think, but you've got to be able to take on board, and if the majority want to go one way, then that's what you've really got to toe the line, I guess.
And it's interesting, because Bob's like probably old enough to be is a different generation to me, so and he presents, you know, he's got the grey beard and everything. And so it took me a while to work out, but underneath it all, and especially I imagine when he was younger, he was kind of a rebel, a bit of an outsider, a bit of a rebel, I'm guessing. So he must have gone through a process of working out how to operate from the inside rather than the outside, as he'd done for a long time.
Yeah, and that was one of the things that comes back to that working with staff and working with council and working within the system. So, you know, and he built the relationship with council, and he worked closely with Lisa as councillor when he was chair to make certain that she was supported with her voice, and that was another reason he'd go to the meetings. And, you know, it's a feather in his cap that he was allowed in at public excluded. He was invited up to the table. He was given speaking rights at some meetings. Now, not all meetings, but particularly at the committee meetings, and that's where the hard mahi's done. And if there were workshops, he'd make certain he attended. Because he worked within the community and was involved in so many organisations, and even simple things like doing the leaf blowing to keep the streets clean, you know, that the boys would do, like Trotty and them, and people would stop and they'd be getting a coffee and they'd have a chat to him. So you get to hear not just the squeaky wheels, which is often, or the staunch views, which is often what you see in the media with Raglan, when in fact, often that's not what the majority want.
Yeah. So he was just meeting people casually and in a different way, I guess.
Yeah, and because he had his ear to the ground, and, you know, he'd do things like go to AGMs, and he'd go down to the Coast Guard AGM and thank them for their work, and those sort of things. Again, it comes back to relationships and trust.
Yeah, and I think that something that I always mention this, and I always ask potential candidates, are they aware that when they're on the community board that they quite literally don't actually have any power? They don't. There's no levers that they can pull and buttons they can push in a regulatory manner to make things happen that is completely dependent on the relationships.
Yeah, and you know, it's a role of advocacy. It's a role of trying to influence and inform decision making, and particularly, you know, the councillors have to make decisions for the district as a whole, and it's making certain that if there's going to be a negative impact on Raglan, they understand that and what it is, and that's why it's so important understanding what the issues are and being able to question staff and put forward alternative solutions so that they get considered.
Yeah, yeah. Now, something that's interesting, you have an interesting perspective because you actually work for a different council than our own council. And so you're literally on the inside, and you must see people coming from into council and you know, politicians or new politicians coming in on community boards, and what's the effect of someone who comes in thinking that it's their job to throw their weight around and force things to happen when they haven't actually got the power? I mean, how does that work out from the inside perspective?
To be honest, it makes it really difficult for staff because you've got to remember that there's the Local Government Act and the GOIMA, and which is dictates how meetings will be advertised and run, and it's also your official information requests. But there's a lot of things that staff can't throw their weight around and just do stuff either. And you can provide information, but ultimately it's the elected members who, the mayor and councillors, who get to decide. And I think some community boards are really effective and some aren't. And the ones that are effective are the ones where they understand the system and they understand their role within the system. And as you said, they understand it's about relationships and it's not about dictating what they believe should happen, because it's also, don't forget, it's got to be for the district as a whole, not a specific ward, and that's where the tension is. So
yeah,
and I've seen that in Waikato district where you've got Huntly people saying one thing and you know, Raglan thinks quite differently or Tamahere thinks differently. So it's actually making certain that there's respect on both sides and understanding the constraints both are working under.
It's actually a pretty wacky district council with all those, like you say, Raglan, Huntly, the new bit up north, Tamahere, very vastly different communities. It's a wonder it works at all, really, in some ways.
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the things, it's quite interesting, the Officer of the Auditor General's just released a report on risk management in local government, and one of the recommendations about that is the improved training for elected members, and I was part of a case study. Our council was part of a case study and I was heavily involved. And, you know, people forget elected members come on to council, but they may have a business background or a farming background or a community background, and the same with our community board members, but they need training in local government, and like they get induction programs and there are courses, but they also need to understand risk management, and they're dealing all of a sudden with a whole lot of technical stuff that they may have never been exposed to, like the Three Waters reforms, a classic, because, you know, I know some mayors were out, oh, we need to consult with the communities. Well, the engineers and the planners and the the policy experts are struggling with the information or lack of information that's coming out from central government. And to go and ask the ratepayers, what do you think? You know, it's not a simple answer. And you can't just go out and ask people what they think when the technical people haven't even got their heads around it, let alone the elected members. And I know from our council, and it'll be the same for Waikato District, there's hours and hours of workshops and meetings and reading and stuff to actually try and get their heads around this stuff.
And that's a bit of a thing. That's something I've certainly noticed. Like, there's no way I can keep up in my job with all the stuff that people are reading. And I've got to say that of all the people I've talked to in this role, I talked to community board chairs and councillors and other community board members. Bob was probably the one who had the biggest handle on what was going on at all the different levels. And it's not to say some of the others weren't really good as well, but just that he really did have a handle on all of that. I mean, I don't even know how do you get on top of all that reading?
Well, it was part of the mahi that he did. He did the reading, and he would go along. You know, if he went to an infrastructure meeting, you know, there'd be stickies all over the agenda, and he would have notes and questions, and it was because he did the hard yards, basically.
Yeah.
And that's how he built up an understanding. But also, and hearing the discussion at those meetings, you develop your understanding more in what the issues are and what are the tensions. Because obviously there's a trade-off between things like growth, paying for growth, but you've also got to replace what you've already got in infrastructure.
Yeah,
and keep on top of it. And built up a lot of knowledge, and he would ask questions too. And that was where often if something was a bit controversial or he wasn't certain, he'd quite often chat to one of the staff members and that was the expert.
Yeah, yeah. And
he had the relationship, he could do that.
And staff are happy to... I mean, there must be a balance. Like, they don't want every community board member from every community board talking to them all the time. They won't get any work done. But do staff expect that they're going to be communicating with the politicians?
It does vary, but a lot comes back to culture within the council.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of his rebel streak, if you like. He knew how to work within the system that he could get access basically to those staff appropriately, and that was the thing. He didn't abuse that either.
Yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah. Hey, something that's also important, like dissent within the community board, obviously they're going to disagree, but how low can a dissent within a board bring the board? Like, can it bring it to total dysfunction?
I think we saw that with a previous chair, where a lot of the board had no confidence in her, and her behaviour was very divisive. And basically, it meant that there was no trust from Ngarrawarrina that whatever they heard was actually the view of the board. There was a lot of undermining of each other going on, and it becomes totally dysfunctional. And if it's dysfunctional, it'll get ignored.
Yeah.
That's the reality.
Yeah, that's pretty blunt, eh? That's the way of it. So the current board, which Bob was a member of before he passed, I mean, did he feel that there was going pretty well in that regard?
Yeah, he was a bit circumspect in what he would say to me, and to be fair, he wasn't as involved when he got sick, but he didn't necessarily agree with all of his colleagues, but he knew that they, like, they'd have the pre-meetings and discuss stuff, and he was happy that some were taking on more responsibility.
Yeah, yeah. And so he also, like you mentioned before, that he was developing quite a mentoring role as well.
Yeah, so there were quarterly meetings of the community board's people at Waikato, and he was part of that. But I know that he had a couple of the other community boards in the Waikato district. He had members that would ring him and say, you know, just to ask how do we get information, or they might have a situation. I think because Raglan is diverse and has some opposing opinions, you know, how have you dealt with this, or if there was a, you know, resource consent going through, who do we talk to about it? Just some of it was how to work within council, but he also had people that rang him from around the country, and they were people he'd met at conferences and obviously had built that relationship with.
Yeah, and did I hear that he was actually, he had been mentoring one of the candidates for to take his position? Or had some conversations with?
No, I think, no, he wasn't directly mentoring. But he was also, like, I know one of the reasons that the chair was changed this time round and Bob was deputy chair is thinking about succession planning. And that's the other thing that a lot of community boards suffer from, Raglan suffered from it for a while until Clint came in as councillor, is a turnover of councillors. So they spend, you know, the first year trying to find out what the hell's going on. The next yeah. year they're beginning to do stuff, and then the next year they're electioneering. So, or seeing the light at the end of the tunnel and getting out. And that's, I think, it's the continuity as well. So Bob could hold staff accountable. You know, if you said you were going to report back in 6 months' time and you haven't reported back and you're telling us you haven't done anything for the last 6 months, now there might be sound reasons for that, but he wouldn't let things drop off. He made them start being more accountable about what actions they were having to do.
Yeah.
We've still got boxes and boxes of agendas.
Oh, at the house.
That I've got to get rid of.
Oh, dear. Yes. Hey, and I know that
he'd go back, ferret through, and he'd say, I know that there was a report that, and they recommended this, and this is where they're doing, and now they've changed their mind. And it might be, yes, it was appropriate to change their minds, but he wanted to make certain that it was an informed decision and it was the right decision.
Yeah, and if you get, I mean, I know politicians turn over, but staff turn over too, and it has been noticeable yeah. that at this council that there'll be things that get forgotten about, and then it's up to the politicians. They're the only ones who can remember it, hopefully.
Yeah, and to be fair, I guess it's a little bit tricky in the Waikato compared to some other areas because there are a lot of councils within a small area. So, like, if you live in Hamilton, you could work, for example, in Regional Council, Hamilton City, Waikato, Waipa, Matamata, all easily commutable.
Yeah.
And South Waikato even. And so there is a movement of staff through the various councils.
Yeah, of course, yeah, because they've got somewhere to go if they're even feeling slightly like they're not liking their job anymore.
Yeah, or different challenges and to grow.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and different councils are in different programs of work depending on what's going on in their areas. So they move to where the interesting work is, the more interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Jenny, one of the things that I talked about a lot with Bob was like the devolution of power to community boards. And we did mention before how technically the community board doesn't really have any power except over its discretionary fund. And Bob was a big advocate for that. How do you think that whole thing is going for us? Is the council giving up its power?
My understanding, and Lisa's a better one to talk about this, my understanding is Waikato is changing its stance on that. I think it's been part of the representation review, and I don't know where they've landed. I know in Waipa they were looking at, they've got a mix of a ward committee and two community boards, and they were looking at whether they needed community boards. I think the submissions back were please keep them after the consultation. But you've got to also look at how efficient we've got to have governments. We've got to allow people to have their say in local government and ensure that localism and the community engagement, but you also don't want a lot of overhead and cost. I know that one of the councillors in Waipa was very vocal that it was costing more to administer giving away the money than it was to give away the money, the money being given away.
Yeah.
And we should be being smarter about what we do, really.
Well, that's interesting because the district council here has just changed the way they do the discretionary fund and with that, trying to address that specific issue. And they have given as much of the administration and the power back to the community board about how they dole out the money from the discretionary fund there, with that intent of maximising it.
Mm. Yeah. And that was something that Bob was pushing for because as well, you have someone looking that writes a very good application, and what people don't see is they've actually are an organisation that maybe are getting funding from, I don't know, Trust Waikato or somewhere for argument's sake, that they're a cash-rich group, and another group that's not so good at writing proposals misses out.
Yeah.
Or alternatively, they know that one group's working hard, and I know it was something with the funding applications to Lions. It was always, well, who else have you asked, and what have you done about it, rather than just put your hand out. So some people were doing active fundraising type things and we would top up, or you'd know that they'd just come into the community and were basically going to set up a business and were coming to ask for money under the guise that was helping youth.
Yeah, and the great thing with the community board is that because everyone's connected into the community, they just know where everyone's at with that stuff. So that is a real microcosm of how local knowledge helps to make an organisation much more efficient. You just don't need the bureaucracy to cover all your bases because people just know.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you want to talk about?
I think what I'd like to say is you need someone who is passionate and loves Raglan, will look, be prepared to make the hard decisions and do the work, and look to the future, take a long-term view, and be part of the community and be able to build relationships with the community and with the council.
Yeah, yeah. And when we say hard decisions, what do you mean? What's a hard decision?
Well, I guess the airfield's a good example. Like, it's very easy to jump up and down, but council's actually being driven by the as I understand it, by civil aviation, and some of that is legislation, it's mandated. So, and they've got health and safety to consider. And whilst we might all say, oh, well, nothing's happened, if something happened, we'd be the first to be saying to council, why did you allow this to happen? And I know the community board's trying to find an answer that will satisfy the most people and still meet the rules that have to be met. And that's the sort of issue where I see they've been doing a really good job. And it concerns me that you can have an individual that starts running meetings when there's a lot of hard work going on in the background, talking to CAA, talking to council and working through what are the options we can. Because that sort of thing just undermines them where Raglan's coming from, you know, where the community board's coming from and the good work that they're doing.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I know that Lisa and Gabrielle have been working on that and the rest of the community board, and it's really important that we don't get in the way of the community board doing their job. They've got a hard enough job as it is. And I guess for me, it's really important that whoever gets elected will represent the community, not just their standpoint, and they will look at all issues, not just one issue.